It's Offsides with Mark Ryan. Hour number two is on your radio, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 97.1 FM in Spartanburg, 1330 AM in Anderson and Clemson. What is going on upstate? Loaded final, 2 hours of the show for you today. And then tomorrow, where are we, Lonzo?
Hall of Fame Sports and Grill.
Hall of Fame Sports Grill. Where is that, Lonzo?
It's on Wade Hampton.
Wade Hampton. And where is Wade Hampton?
That way.
In Greenville, South Carolina. So we had Matt Hogan on, and before we had him on, you said to me, Lonzo, off the air, you said, I have a theory about how this is going to go. All right? Now, Lonzo, it's time to fess up now, because you know there is no distinction that I make between off-air conversations and on-air conversations. So what was the theory, and were you wrong?
I don't have a problem with this. I know that Matt Hogan helps with a lot of the show, and I think he has had Clemson leanings in the past. So I immediately believed that that's the way he was going to go. Now he is.
You assumed.
No, I did not. You notice I didn't say that. You notice
well,
I didn't say
just
that.
Just because you said
I don't use that word because it's not liked by management types. Anyway, so I am not using that word, and no, I did not do that.
Well, you're making me sound like I shouldn't be using it either.
No, you should use it all you want.
Okay, there you
go. So anyway, I was wrong, and I apologize to Matt Hogan, who is not listening to the show. But if he were, he would hear me apologize. And the only reason why I'm apologizing to Matt Hogan is because I know he's not listening to the show right now.
Oh, there you go. If he was listening, Lonzo would not be apologizing. But if you're as annoyed by those comments from Lonzo as I am, you will thoroughly enjoy what's taking place 45 minutes from right now as Lonzo attempts what I did yesterday, the 60-second plank challenge. Now, you might be saying, and I issue that challenge to you guys. Can you do a plank for 60 seconds? It sounds easier than it is. All right? It sounds much easier than it is. As a matter of fact, I was doing some research on this yesterday, Lonzo. Less than 50% of people can actually do a 60-second plank.
Really?
Right? Yeah, less than 50% of the people can do it. I would imagine that number would be even lower if you told them that you're going to have to do it on linoleum, okay? That you don't get to do it on your plush rug at home or on your cute little yoga mat. You don't get to do it on either one of those things. So I'd imagine it's even less than 50.
Cute little yoga mat that now we know you actually own one of. So, you know.
Wait a minute. Let me go back and read that.
Yeah, that's what she said, your yoga mat, which implied that you have one and she knows that you have one.
I do have a yoga mat. That is true, Lonzo. That is true.
You know why? Damn. Because I listen to your mom.
Damn, Lonzo. Listen to you kissing up. Good gosh. I mean, I'm sure your check's in the mail over that way. Okay, let's check on Twitter here very briefly. And let's see here. Oh, lots of feedback on the most annoying of the two fan bases. Let's start with Casey Helderman, who says the most annoying fan base is a tie between Georgia and Alabama. Sig Epp at the Clemson. I wonder who he doesn't think is the most annoying fan base. Sounds like a bitter Florida or Ohio State on the line to me. Michael Stathakis says, love it. I'll take the hits on South Carolina just to hear Matt go in on straight truths on Clemson. Love it. Love it. Chris Marshall says Matt and his SEC bias. LOL. You see how the dividing line here, right? Casey Helderman continues, excuse me, Matt. It's South Carolina fans who jumped on the Bama bandwagon because it's an SEC school. Plus, I've been called stupid by many South Carolina fans. And also, Mr. Hogan, most Clemson fans actually hate Duke and North Carolina, and those that pull for them are generally from the Triangle. What does that mean? The Triangle. What is? I have no idea what that is.
They care a lot about regions around here, upstate, Midlands.
What does that mean, the Triangle? I don't understand what that means.
I used to know.
Casey, give us a call. Give us a call. Let me know what that means, the Triangle. Or have family ties to the schools, like I pull for Wofford but went to Clemson. See, Wofford is okay if you're a Clemson fan, but you cannot like a second major school. Chris Marshall says, yes, I have some Clemson friends that act that way, the way that Matt Hogan said they do, all arrogant and such. But more that don't. Also, my Carolina buddies aren't as bad as what Matt was saying. In the end, good segment. Love it. Absolutely love it. Matt Stathakis says Casey Helderman is digging her grave. Casey is laughing at Steven saying that Clemson students don't work hard because we're happy. Buddy, we're a top 25 public university, have one of the best engineering programs, agricultural business programs, nursing programs, agricultural business. We are happy because we go to a fantastic school with a beautiful campus, amazing academics, and a top-notch football program. Listen, them is fighting words. The gloves are off here in the most annoying fan base discussion. Proof that the passion and the fervor for this rivalry is top five in the country. Melinda joins us up next to edumacate me on the area a little bit. Melinda, help a brother out here. What am I missing?
The Triangle is also known as Tobacco Road. It is Chapel Hill, Durham, Winston-Salem, and Raleigh.
Okay, well, what does that have to do with Clemson, though?
She said that the people that did pull for Duke in North Carolina were from the Triangle. Triangle is Chapel Hill, Durham, that area.
Yeah, but
if you look on the map, it's a triangle of those cities.
But would you agree with me, Melinda, that it's generally uncool if you like a major school to root for another major school? You're not allowed to do that.
Well, I can't really say that because I'm a Georgia fan and grew up a Georgia fan all my life. However, I absolutely hated both of the basketball coaches at Georgia, the women's coach and the men's coach. And I became a North Carolina fan.
No, Melinda, you can't do that. You can't, just because you hate the coach, that just means you have a down period in your life about the basketball program. You don't get to pick another school. You don't get to do that, Melinda. Oh, come on, Melinda. Come on. Melinda, as you enter the studio here, please turn in your Georgia fan card. I am collecting it, okay? You have lost your Georgia fan card, Melinda. I am so sorry to tell you that.
Well, it be what it be.
Thanks for the call.
You know what, Melinda? Don't let someone else define what fandom is for you. I hate these arrogant people like Mark Ryan who say you cannot be a fan of two teams.
You can't.
Who says you can't? You say. And
that's
who are
right.
you to tell me what I can do? I can be a fan of as many teams as I want to, and if you don't like it, I don't care.
Well, tough,
go, Melinda.
Tough. I am the arbiter of fandom. As proclaimed by me.
Do you have a written proclamation somewhere?
Yes, I have written it.
Okay.
I have written a proclamation that I am the arbiter of fandom rules, of the laws of fandom. Okay? And as a matter of fact, Lonzo, because you have so rudely accused me of this, I, the arbiter of fandom, will reveal the rules of fandom on Friday's show. Okay? So I, ruler of all things fandom and sport, will reveal the laws of fandom.
Is that your title, ruler?
Ruler.
Okay.
I am ruler of all things fandom. I will release to the heavens my rules of fandom on Friday's show. Okay? That's coming your way. And you better heed these advice or you're going to be stripped of every fan card. Okay? Get me a gavel up in here. For crying out loud. I need it.
I don't think you need something that you could break things with. That would be bad.
You think? Really? You're going there, huh? Okay.
You're kind of a nervous talker. If you have a gavel in your hand, I'm going to lose an eye.
You are going to lose an eye. There's no doubt about it. All right. So yesterday, I'm watching the NBA playoffs, and I was really sorry to be doing so. Folks, the NBA playoffs has become completely and totally unwatchable. It has become completely and totally unwatchable. Compare and contrast what you're watching in the NBA playoffs right now to that of the March Madness first round. You've got buzzer beaters left and right. You've got lower seeds upsetting high seeds. You've got high seeds, clinging to life with tight sphincters, trying to play out the games to the best of their ability. I mean, you have drama. Well, I'm watching last night, Toronto versus the Orlando Magic, they're up 3-1. The 76ers over the Brooklyn Nets, they're up 3-1. And the halftime score, this is an NBA game, okay? This isn't Clemson versus Coastal Carolina in football. Halftime of an NBA game, Philadelphia 76ers versus Brooklyn Nets last night, the score is 60-31. Totally unwatchable. Totally unwatchable. And the NBA seriously needs to look at changing that. I've got some research here, all right? of the in terms of the last 16 years in the NBA, out of 128 lower seeds in the first round of the playoffs, only 28 of 128 have pulled the upset to advance to the second round. That's 21%. Of those 28 teams, 16 of the 21 were 5 seeds. The 4-5 seed isn't even really an upset. So you look at the 6, 7, and 8 seeds, they're 5 out of 128. 5 out of 128 series, they've advanced. Okay? And 0 of 128 lower seeds made it to the NBA Finals since 2003. 0, 5, 6, and 7, and 8 seeds have made it to the NBA Finals since 2003. Why are we wasting everybody's time? Why do we continue to do this? This is damn near unwatchable, all right? So far in the playoffs this year, all but one lower-seeded team, the Spurs, were losing as of yesterday. They're now losing their series 3-2 to the Denver Nuggets, all right? Every single lower seed has lost. There's been very little excitement, very little drama to speak of. The Nets and Magic won the first game of the series, and then the Raptors and the Clippers, the Raptors and the Sixers woke up and won 4 in a row against their far inferior competition. It's a waste of everybody's time. So what do you do? How do you fix it? You're watching the NBA right now. If you're an NBA fan, do you agree with me or disagree that there's a sizable issue here? I think there's a major issue here. All right. Here are some possible solutions. Cut the amount of playoff teams to 6 instead of 8 in each conference. Therefore, you would give the first 2 seeds a playoff series bye in the first round. Look, you know, then you have 3, 4, 5, and 6 playing in the first round. You save 2 weeks of our lives, all right? Second thing you could do, you could make the first round of the playoffs a best-of-5 series. They made it best-of-7 just to increase the ticket revenue, right, and TV revenue. But it's not compelling basketball. Nothing about this is compelling. Now, if you run a best-of-5 series, and you have Orlando winning the first game, and you have Brooklyn pulling an upset and winning the first game, you have the Spurs winning a first game as a 7 seed, then all of a sudden there's a lot of pressure on the higher seed because it's best-of-5. That creates drama. As it is, even if Orlando wins the first game, even with Brooklyn winning the first game, you know damn well they're not beating the Raptors or the Sixers 4 times. There's no drama in this sport. There's no drama whatsoever. All right? And finally, the last thing you could do. How about just getting rid of the conferences and seeding the 16 best teams? Remember all those years, including this one, where the West was so much better than the East, right? All of those consecutive years in the NBA. Now with LeBron in the West, it's even more so that way. Why not just get rid of the conference affiliation and just seed the 16 best teams? Have an entire league playoff if you're going to keep 16 teams in the playoffs. I would be okay, ladies and gentlemen, with any of the above. I would be okay with any of the above. But I'm not okay wasting time. How we're doing the pet peeve bracket? If this were the Mark Ryan pet peeve bracket, wasting time is my number one pet peeve. The first round of the NBA playoffs is a waste of everybody's time. And it's high time we do something about that. Coming up next, I took the Wonderlic today. I will reveal how I did to you. Full transparency coming your way next. Right on the flip side of the most interactive sports radio show in the upstate, you're Offsides with Mark Ryan. 26 minutes away from the Lonzo 60-second plank challenge. Can we make it happen? We will soon find out. Trying to build the anxiety for Lonzo here. You know, that's what we're kind of trying to do. All right, it's Offsides with Mark Ryan. Loaded show about halfway through. Got a fun interview coming up your way about 15 minutes from right now. I'm going to share with you what that is momentarily. But you've heard this this Wonderlic thing, right? It's the test that they give all these players coming into the NFL from college. And, you know, like whether you always each year, the really low scores come out. I think Morris Claiborne got a really low score, but he was found to have a learning disability. Listen, it's not something you poke fun at people for, but it's something that I find very, very fascinating. All right. Ryan Fitzpatrick, quarterback, got 48 on the Wunderlich. It's out of a possible 50. Now, I took the Wunderlich today. And before I tell you how I did on said Wunderlich, I want to share with you that the average score is a 20, right? So average intelligence on the Wunderlich test, on average intelligence, is a 20. 50 is the highest possible score. So 20 doesn't mean you did poorly, okay? 20 means you scored in the average intelligence category. Here's my, and let me just say this. I think that it's really kind of impossible to narrow down someone's intelligence on any one particular test. The IQ test is supposed to tell, you know, it's supposed to, it's designed to basically make people feel bad if they don't score highly on that test. The reality is we all have different intelligences. You know, we all are highly intelligent in certain areas of specialty. So I have a fundamental problem with, you know, trying to highlight someone's overall mental proficiency by how they perform in a test. All that being said, I want to share with you that average intelligence is a 20. The highest scoring position in the NFL is the offensive tackle. And the offensive tackle, the average score for offensive tackles in football is 26. So here were my results today, okay? By the way, some low scores. Darren Davis, former running back, scored a 4. Mario Manningham scored a 6. Frank Gore scored a 6. Vince Young scored a 6. High scores, Pat McAnally, 50. Mike Mamula, 49. Ben Watson, 48. Ryan Fitzpatrick, 48. Matt Burke, the center from Harvard, 46. Greg McElroy from Alabama, 43. Scored a 43 on the test. So I'm going to completely share with you my results, and then I'm going to give you what I perceive my score to be, okay? I took the test. I took it completely cold, not having done anything like this in a really long time. And in the first attempt that I took, 12 minutes, 50 questions, I really underestimated how fast that clock was moving, okay? And so by when the test was done, yours truly had scored a 26, okay? Then I was unsatisfied with that result of a 26. So what I did was I went to a completely different site that had completely different questions, and I took the Wunderlich again, different, you know, none of the same questions were there. And having a feel for the time and having a feel for the kind of questions they asked, I got a 42 on the second one. Okay. So what I think, Lonzo, you tell me, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think it's fair to average the two and to say 34 is my Wunderlich score. Okay? Because it's not like these players don't get to practice the Wunderlich before they get to take it, right? So I'm going to give myself a 34, which puts me, let's see, who scored a 34? Luke Kuechly scored a 34 on the Wunderlich, okay? According to my estimation, I have similar Wunderlich intelligence to one Luke Kuechly. What do you think, Lonzo?
I think you should go with your first score.
Of course.
I think you should go with 26. And listen, that's still above average, because you pointed out several times that 20 is average, so you're above average. The reason why I say that is so the next time you understood the timing, you understood everything involved with the test, even though they were different questions.
Right. And the players,
so it's a little unfair.
No, the players understand all that.
I have never heard that they do practice.
Oh, you got to be kidding me. Of course they practice it.
I've never heard that. Really?
Yes, they practice it. Their team runs them through the questions, runs them through how the test is going to go, so on and so forth. So
I do have another question, though. Yeah. All right, how would you compare it to, I don't know if you took the ACT or the SAT. Which one did you take?
I did so bad on the SAT.
Okay.
I did so bad.
So how would you compare this to the SAT?
I did the ACT. I did much better. Okay. I think I got a 24 on the ACT.
That's what I got on the ACT.
Okay.
I got a 24.
Okay. So you got a 24. I got a 24 on the ACT. We're not going to talk about how we did on the SAT. We're gonna leave that be.
My 24 on the ACT was good enough to get me into a bunch of places I want to get into. So I said, forget the SAT.
There you go. There you go. So here's the problem. Here's what happened to me the first time, Lonzo. You get stumped on one question, and you're determined to figure it out. But it's almost like they're trying to trip you up. They're trying to say, we're going to waste two of your... You got 12 minutes, Lonzo, to answer 50 questions. 50. Okay? So that's more than four questions a minute. You've got 15 seconds per question.
Are you penalized for not answering? Is it one of those things where you need to answer every question?
On the ones that I did, you had to put in A, B, C, or D. You had to put in an answer. But the first time I took it, I'm like, oh, hell no, I'm going to answer this question. And then I spend 2 minutes, and then the next thing I know, I don't have enough time to answer the rest of the bloody questions. So when you kind of figure out the timing a little bit, I was able to do a lot better on it. So I, you know, you're gonna hold me to the first low score when I didn't understand the feel of the test, and I'm gonna average my two scores, and I'm gonna give myself a 34.
I'm sorry I have so many questions, but give me an example of a question off the Wunderlich test, something that you remember, because I'm curious what the questions are like.
Yeah, it was a lot of like, you know, if you traveled a third of a foot in 10 seconds, how far would you travel? What's the next number in the sequence? 36, 23, you know what I mean? And stuff like that. What's the next number in the sequence? Those kinds of things. But the ones that tripped you up was they'd have colored portions of graphs. And then it would say, which ones did you need to put together to create this picture? Right? And I'm like drawing them on a piece of paper. Meanwhile, 2 minutes of my time is going by and I'm falling behind here.
So I'm guessing you didn't do a lot of puzzles growing up.
Unfortunately, there wasn't a ton of puzzle doing growing up. There were also a lot of like analogous type words where it was like, are these two words similar, dissimilar, or no relation whatsoever? And sometimes those were easier than other times, right?
All this is random. It's not in a certain section. It's just
listen, you don't have to reveal your score, Lonzo, but I think it would be a fun exercise for you to do because, like, the first time you do it, you're like, oh, crap, I haven't done anything like this in a really long time. By the second
it's a lot longer than you.
But by the second time you do it, you're much better equipped to deal with it. Much better equipped to deal with it. All right. So 34 on the Wunderlich for yours truly. I'm going to take the average of my two scores and I'm going to roll with that. And I feel good about that. And let's see here. In terms of professions, a nurse has an average score of a 23. Do I want to say this one, Lonzo? Yes or no?
Oh yeah, you definitely want to.
A salesperson has an average score of 25. An electronics technician has an average score of 26. A chemist has an average score of 31. I don't think I'm smarter than a chemist. So I don't know. I have no idea. But be that as it may, you know, some varying scores on the Wunderlich test. A fun exercise until I saw that first 26. I felt much better seeing the 42 than I did the 26.
What does an engineer get? Is that on there? Because I know a couple engineers. I'm curious about that.
29.
Okay. Right.
Engineer, average score for an engineer on the Wunderlich is a 29. Interesting stuff indeed. So there you go. I don't know if that enhances or kills your impression of me here on the show, but I did okay. We'll just say that. Well, I did okay. The other thing I want to get to, and I, you know, every once in a while you come across an outstanding piece of journalism, an outstanding piece of research, and a gentleman that's going to join us in the next segment named Chris Hummer. Came out with this outstanding piece of research. See, what Chris did was he studied college football players over a 5-year period of time to determine the answer to the following question. Which programs best develop elite prospects? And so whenever I see an article like this that's just come out, it's hot off the presses, it's brand new, and I know that you would have a high level of interest in that, and I would have a high level of interest in that, my aim is always to try to get the author of that article to come on the show. So I saw it was 24/7 Sports. I reached out to my buddy J.C. Sherbert, and J.C., hooked me up with the author of this article, and Chris Hummer, the author of this article, will join us next. So when we come back here on Offsides, I'm going to reveal to you the answer to the question, which programs best develop elite prospects at the college level. Listen, the results may not be what you expect. A little tease for a surprise there. Chris Hummer of 24/7 Sports joins us next on this unbelievable piece of research. You're listening to the most interactive sports radio show in the upstate of South Carolina. You're Offsides on ESPN Upstate. It's Offsides with Mark Ryan right here on ESPN Upstate. No wasted time. Want as much time with him as possible. Chris Hummer of 24/7 Sports joins us. Which programs best develop elite prospects? A five-year study. Chris, thanks so much for making the time, man. Great to have you on the show. Can you tell us, because I'm learning about your study at the same time as our audience, can you tell us the basis for the study, how you guys determined what you did, and then we'll reveal the results together here.
Yeah, I think we wanted to take a look at how teams develop the top 247 prospects that we kind of salivate over as reporters.
So are these the top 300 players in the country?
The top 247.
247. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we look at those, and we looked at them from 2010 to 2014, and we kind of tracked how they went throughout their careers. We essentially separated them into groups, first-round picks, second- and third-round picks, and fourth- to seventh-round picks in order to kind of match the NFL draft. And then we also discarded several categories, guys who were dismissed, guys who transferred previous to the two-year mark, and stuff like that, to kind of come up with an all-encompassing data set of how schools developed elite talents. And, and we kind of put the formula together and put out an article yesterday.
So just curious, Chris, why not do 2014 to 2018?
Most of those players are either still in college or very few of them have left. It's more of the exception than the rule when guys leave after 3 years. I know the best prospects you see every year kind of leave as underclassmen, but a lot of players are still in college after their fourth or fifth seasons. There are even still some players in the 2013 class who stuck around college football this year.
Wow.
With six-year medical redshirt. So it's kind of hard to...
So it really is the first time frame that you could have done this, right? I mean, it's and I love it, and I didn't know if there would be a way to do this. I mean, because it's something, Chris, that people think about often. It's something that, you know, I credit Dabo Swinney with, because I wonder aloud how, for example, Nick Saban is an elite head coach, and then when he gets the number one overall class, it seems impossible to beat him. And Dabo Swinney has been beating Nick Saban with a class the last 4 years per 24/7 Sports that's had an average ranking of number 11, which I consider to be impossible, which leads one to believe that Dabo Swinney's doing an elite job developing the players that he has. So before we get to the results here, Chris, was there anything that really jumped off the page to you during your research, anything that shocked you here?
Yeah, there was a couple of things. I think at the end of the day, you kind of, when I looked at the results at the end, you kind of saw what you expected to see, if that makes sense. I expected schools like Clemson to kind of out-recruit their recruiting ranking. I expected a couple other schools to. I live in Austin, so I'm pretty well aware how bad Texas is.
One of the best cities in America. I visited it once. I love it. How are you so fortunate to live there, Chris? Is it just you work for 24/7 Sports and you just get to pick where you live? Is that how that happened?
Yeah, I got lucky. I used to cover Texas, actually, so I ended up staying there after I got my current job. But I just eat barbecue all the time. It really could be worse.
That's tremendous, man. Tremendous. Okay, so we put together the top programs in college football in terms of who does the best job developing their players. You get 3 points for a first round pick, 2 points for a second or third, and 1 point if the player was drafted fourth through seventh overall pick. And you remove four categories: players who were dismissed, players who didn't qualify, players who medically retired, players who transferred after two or few seasons. I'm going to count down, based on Chris Hummer's list here, the top 10 programs in terms of developing their players. Number 10, Notre Dame. This is developing their elite players, the players that were in the among the best 247 players in the country. Number 10, Notre Dame. Number 9, Texas A&M. Number 8, Florida State. Number 7, Ole Miss. Number 6, LSU. Number 5, Miami. Number 4, Ohio State. Number 3, Clemson. Number 2, Alabama. And number 1, who else? My alma mater, the Florida Gators. The best developing program in the country, which kind of burns my brownies a little bit, Chris, because these are players that that Will Muschamp and Jim McElwain recruited that didn't take us anywhere, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, you look at that top four, and Florida's just the one school that jumps out at you because they didn't do much with that. But I think that shows how important coaching is and kind of a steady leader of a program. They had a lot of upheaval at that program, as I'm sure you know. And I think that really factors into your ability to win, even with premium talent that's developed correctly.
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt about that. And, you know, South Carolina comes in at number 21 on this list, 2010 to 2014. As a program, how do you feel like South Carolina's doing in general?
In general, I think I'm pretty familiar with Will Muschamp because he was at Texas for a while previously. And I think they're doing fine. I think you kind of miss Steve Spurrier's energy with that program a little bit.
No doubt about it.
And I think that's also part of the reason why it kind of took a little bit of a nosedive there, because he left pretty abruptly. And I think that has a big effect on those rankings and kind of the quality of prospect people bring in. But I really like what the offense is looking like next year with Jake Bentley kind of coming back for his senior year. I know a lot of people have questions about him, but it's rare you have a four-year starter in college football. And I think that matters. It's just kind of tough when you're in the same state as Clemson and they're doing what they're doing in the recruiting trail. That's kind of an uphill battle in that way.
So Texas didn't do so well. You know, Texas was 29th in the country in terms of getting the most out of 38 top 24/7 players between 2010 and 2014. Only 10.5% of those 38 were drafted. A poor development rating. That, I suppose, explains what Tom Herman is trying to turn around here.
Yeah, it was pretty awful there for a while. To put it in perspective, Texas had the number one overall running back in the country two seasons in a row, Jonathan Gray and Malcolm Brown, and neither one of them got drafted. And that's almost impossible to do. Running backs are about as developed as you get once you get to campus, and neither one of those guys left Texas as a draftee. So that kind of puts into perspective like the amount that Tom Herman had to do when he got there. But he's recruiting out of his mind right now, and I think you're kind of seeing Texas turn around quickly, because guys are getting developed correctly. And that'll reflect in the draft this week, because Texas should have 3 or 4 guys drafted. And there have been years in the past where they went 0-for on the board.
Unbelievable. So I've got to be honest with you, Chris. It really surprises me that Alabama is ranked above Clemson in terms of player development. When you then look at the recruiting rankings and you see that Alabama is getting more talent than Clemson, but Clemson is beating Alabama for the national championship 2 out of the last 3 years. I don't quite understand that.
I mean, it's one, I would point out that in most of those cases, it's one game, and those games, except for this last one, have been pretty close. But Clemson's kind of done it a different way. And I would point out that a lot of the players that really contributed in that national title game this year weren't counted. These development rankings. I believe Alabama won 3 national championships within the window of that kind of recruiting class bracket. But Dabo Sweeney's done an excellent job, and I think he runs his program in quite a bit different way than Nick Saban does. I described in the article as more surgical recruiting. I know Clemson had a really big class this past year, but Dabo Sweeney knows the type of bodies and the type of personalities that he wants on his team. And he knows the traits that he needs, and they grab them and they develop them. You don't see a lot of players leave Clemson. I know Kelly Bryant and Hunter Johnson kind of made national waves, but at Clemson, they're kind of the exception. The transfer portal, for the most part, with Clemson this offseason has been rather quiet, and Clemson brings in small classes, they graduate small classes, and because that coaching staff's remained so steady, I think it's really helped in development. Obviously, Alabama does it just as well as anybody without the same coaches over and over again, but I think the stability at Clemson that Dabo Sweeney's created and that environment has gone a long way with that. But in terms of beating Alabama, I think those are individual circumstances, and it really helps when you have a guy like Trevor Lawrence ready to step in. And Deshaun Watson was pretty good in college too, if I remember.
I think he was okay. I think he'd be okay. And the NFL tried to outthink the room with him, just like they did with Pat Mahomes. You redraft that draft a couple years ago, Chris. I mean, and I think Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson might go 1 and 2. But for some reason, with quarterbacks, we like to nitpick every little thing. But in any case, this is a fantastic piece of research. It's one of the best I've seen in a while, Chris. Congratulations to you for the idea, for implementing the idea, for putting in the time to do the research so that talking heads like me have interesting content to talk about. Thank you so much for doing that, and really appreciate you making the time for us today, bud.
Yeah, of course. Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You got it. All right. Chris Hummer, 247sports.com. Florida, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Miami doing the best job in the nation of developing elite talent. All right. You've been asking for it. You will get it. The Lonzo 60-second plank attempt is coming your way next. Right here on Offsides with Mark Ryan, ESPN. It is time, ladies and gentlemen, for the Lonzo 60-second plank challenge. Lonzo, no matter the result, big ups for doing this, sir. Big ups for doing this. We can't wait to see it. Don't feel bad, win or lose. 50%, more than 50% of people cannot do a 60-second plank. I was able to do it yesterday, but it's not. It doesn't sound like a lot of time, right? But planking for 60 seconds on your elbow on a linoleum floor is not easy to do. It is not an easy thing to do. So we're live here on the air, okay? Yeah, I guess, Lonzo, you got Facebook Live going, okay? And so what we need to do right now is I'm going to look at the clock here, Lonzo, okay? We're going to look at the clock. We're going to get you ready to go. Get the 60-second plank challenge ready to go, and I'm going to put the camera on you. Nobody wants to see me anyway. Here is Lonzo lying on the ground. Okay, hey, Lonzo. Lonzo, when you're ready, you may get into position and begin. Lonzo is underway in the 60-second plank challenge. Here he goes. He's starting out looking very, very confident in the challenge, but that face is beginning to turn mighty red. The face is beginning to turn mighty red for Lonzo there. Let's try to zoom in a little bit if we can. How you feeling here, Lonzo? You want to talk to me? There's no words coming out of Lonzo here, but he's doing mighty, mighty well. He's got 30 seconds left to go. Everyone is chiming in on this, Lonzo. A lot of people are rooting for you. I'm seeing some shaking going on in the lower extremities. People are saying, come on, Tiger hater, you can do it. Lonzo, you have 13 seconds to go. Lonzo, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and congratulations! Lonzo has achieved and succeeded in the 60-second plank challenge. Lonzo, how does it feel, brother? How does it feel?
Oh, I feel awesome.
He feels awesome. He successfully did it. Big up to Lonzo. Hey, what does this say about the conditioning level of us here on Offsides? More than 50% of people can't do that. Both Lonzo and I successfully completed the plank challenge. Now, Lonzo, I've got to ask you, if you had to go for another 10 seconds, could you have made it?
Because of the pain in my elbows? No, I would have stuck it out.
Like, for me, I felt like I had maybe 10 or 15 more seconds left in me. 10 or 15 more seconds left in me. But in any case, dude, congratulations. Congratulations. How does it feel?
Ask me that tomorrow when I can't move.
Ask him that tomorrow when he can't move. Big ups to Lonzo for completing the challenge. Big ups to you for watching us on Facebook Live and Twitter Periscope. Coming up next, it's the top three at three here today. Lots of great stuff to get to in the top three at three, including a major sports league that needs to change its ways. That's up next. This is the most interactive sports radio show in the upstate of South Carolina. You're Offsides on ESPN Upstate.